Without further ado, the reason why we're all here tonight, our main speaker for this evening is going to be Joe Teek from Orphan Time.
Hello, I'm Joe and I'm an alcoholic. And I am glad to be here. And thank you for asking me to come. You know, this is part of the program. You know, sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And you know, welcome to the new people. You know, I did not get this program at the first shot. You know, and that's part of the characteristic of this disease. The biggest symptom, according to the American Medical Association for Alcoholism, is denial. And hopefully that ends before you do. You know, that's the way that works. So, you know, I put a couple notes in here just so I know, you know, I don't want to miss anything, but I don't want to say too much. So, whatever that is. Anyway, welcome to the new people. You know, I like to start with a little joke I heard a while back, and it's an AA joke, so it's okay. It's these two old-timers been sober for like 35 years, the other one's 40 years, and they're in a meeting, and George leans over to John and goes, "Hey, do you think there's AA up in heaven?" And John goes, "I don't know. Whoever gets there first, come back and tell the other guy." Well, the next day, John gets hit by a car and he dies, you know? It's like, oh. So George, about a week later, is in the meeting, and John shows up. And he goes, "Hey, George, I'm coming back to tell you. Remember you asked about that?" And he goes, "Well, is there AA in heaven?" He goes, "There's good news and bad news about this." He goes, "Well, what's the good news?" He goes, "AA is alive and well in heaven, and we have meetings every day." He goes, "Well, that's what could be bad about that?" "Well, you're the speaker on Sunday." So, that is... that's something about the uncertainty of everything else. And I hope someday to meet those guys up there in heaven. Yeah. Anyway, basically, what I plan on doing is, and hopefully I stick to it, is talk about, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, you know, because I can tell you for sure, looking back 19 years, it seems like a whole totally different person, maybe even a whole totally different planet, I don't know, but they told me if I do what's outlined in this program, that things would change, and they have, so... And through this, you know, my sponsor always said, and I keep it in mind because it seems to work pretty good, that I should stick to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't have a big book, see me after the meeting because I got like five in the car that I have to give away. So, and I'm serious about that. And, you know, that's my sponsor told me for every year of sobriety, I have to give away a big book. And that's the cheapest deal I ever got in my entire life, you know, for what the payback is. So, and what I try to do is just pick out little snippets of the big book that are pertinent to me and maybe somebody else. So, I heard recently, I really liked the phrase, it says, the big book has no pictures, but a lot of mirrors, you know? So the more I read that, the more it lights up like, hey, I do that. Or maybe I will, you know, maybe I shouldn't be doing that. So that's why I kind of stick to that. Because, you know, this disease is pretty cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I need to stick to the basics. So, I'll start at the beginning. I was born January 20th, 1956, in Chicago, Illinois, north side of Chicago. I don't know if you've ever been to Chicago, or maybe any big city, but in Chicago, there's a bar in every corner. I mean, I think it's a city ordinance or something. You know, it's like, you got to put a bar in there, you know, because we don't want these people stumbling too far to get there, you know. And it was perfectly normal for people to just be totally whacked, you know, and stumbling, falling down. And it was like, yeah, so what? That's good. You know, that's something about... every person has a right to do that or something like that. And that's kind of where I grew up. You know, my family, there was alcohol in the house, and frequently things might get out of hand, you know, and I thought that that was just life, you know. All the people I knew, they had the same thing. So that kind of introduced me to, I guess, being comfortable with dysfunction, I guess. And it also kind of gave me permission that I could drink. You know, everybody else did. And, you know, I was probably a couple of you that are old enough to live through the 60s and maybe remember it. I don't know, but... That was the time when I grew up, and in the 60s, the entire population had like a revolt of everything, and my parents would say, Joe, whatever you do, don't do drugs. You can drink, but don't do drugs, you know? I thought, okay, sounds good to me, and that began my trail, you know, onto, you know, there was a phrase that, I like it says, a fool that pursues his folly eventually will find wisdom, you know? And that means if you keep doing the same thing over and over and over again, one day you go, hey, wait a second, this ain't working. So thank God I lived long enough to make it into AA and figure that out. Because it was kind of weird, long family, your long trail. Anyway, I had my first drink at 6 years old. And that was... That wasn't given to me. I snatched it, you know. I was like always on the lookout because all those grown-ups had that stuff, and they seemed to be liking it until they passed out, you know. I came from a European background, and they drank all the time. I mean, they would drink wine all the time. So I was there. I don't know what I was doing, but my dad was there at my grandparents' house, and they left a lot of wine. I think they were drunk. You know, and they would just like, oh, I can't find my glass, so I'm pouring another one. So I would like down all those things. And I remember that. That was like, holy, I can see why they do this stuff now. Because it was wonderful to me, you know. I grew up in a large family. I was the second youngest in a family of 10. And there was always a lot of what they call socialization going on there. Which for me means who was the last one standing after the fight, you know. But booze let me feel numb. You know, I wouldn't feel anything. You know, in fact, I remember distinctly like walking in the walls and saying, oh, that was fun. You know, it's like boom, boom, you know. I was indestructible, you know. And even though I knew I didn't drink every day after that, I knew the connection was there. And I was coming back no matter what. That was magic, and you weren't taking it from me. So that kind of set the stage for what was going to be happening for the next 40 years, I guess. So a little more background on me. I was raised in a strict Catholic family. I had to go to Catholic school for like 12 years. And they had this thing, you know, I don't have anything against religion, but Catholicism has this big slant towards guilt, you know, like you're going to hell, you know. And I don't know how that's going to work, because I thought for a long, you know, at least through kindergarten, that, you know, if I did everything they said, I'd be okay. Shortly after that, I realized, like, I could get away with shit. And then they would tell me, you do that, you're going to God's coming down and strike you dead, and you're going to hell. So I gave up at an early age. It's like, okay, well, I don't need a God. In fact, I wanted to be under the radar. I did not want God showing up, you know, because I violated practically everything, you know, Sister Margaret Mary told me I shouldn't be doing. So I was always kind of like on the fringe, you know. And as a result, I never really wanted to be real with anybody. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm not doing that, but I was doing it, you know. And that was, I found after going through this program, that I was getting very good at creating suffering for myself. You know, in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in the literature, they talk about character defects. And I was an early adopter of character defects, believe me. You know, I would hone those things to like a razor's edge. I was on it. And, man, you know, it worked. got me in trouble, but I was like, I always had that backup, you know, early on. I could always find something to self-medicate all that ickiness away, only to find more after I came to. So when I, let's see, and then I wasn't all bad. You know, I was able to play sports. And it's funny, a lot of the jocks, they would be like dopers and stuff. You know, they would be drinking and, you know, they were doing the same thing I was after. And I'd find out that, you know, that kind of met, I don't know, I guess gravity pulls us together, you know, birds of a feather flock together or something. And that's where I ended up. You know, I was in that crowd knowing that I didn't know what exactly was going to be going on. However, when I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous, I read in the book, and again, you should read the book because it kind of gives you a precise explanation of what at least I was up against. I never wanted to take a close look, especially at myself. You know, I'd rather kind of look at you folks and say there's something wrong with you. But in the book, they talk about it's on page 151, you know, and it gives a perfect sequence of what happens. You know, if you pick up a drink, you're an alcoholic, you know, this is what happens. It talks about, it says right here, it means release from care, boredom, and worry. It's joyous intimacy with friends and feeling that life is good, but not so with us in the last days of heavy drinking. And that first part was absolutely true when I first started, you know. And then as you keep drinking, it kind of keeps reeling you in. It's like, yeah, I'm going to keep doing that because why wouldn't I? You know, things aren't so bad, which is that denial part, which somebody told me denial stands for don't even notice I'm lying anymore. It's like, things are okay. I'm still all right. And it keeps going. Anyway, it talks about as we... there was always one more attempt and one more failure. Less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, life itself. That's another attribute of alcoholism, if you want to pursue this, is that your life's going to be kind of small. You know, your world's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, you know, until there's, like, not much left. You know, there's a phrase, I believe it's true, it's... says there's no smaller package than an alcoholic all wrapped up in themselves. And that's me, you know. In a moment's notice, I can become like, this is a big deal. And thank God these steps are here, you know. By the way, the steps are, for me, I learned over the years, I have to be willing to do these steps at pretty much every moment, especially steps 1, 2, and 3, you know. If I do that, I got a chance to avoid... you know, the chaos that I kind of kick up myself. So, okay, kind of back to the way, you know, life was progressing. Somehow I got average grades in school. I thought I was doing great, but I really wasn't. I went back and looked at my transcripts when I went to college, and I go, man, that sucks, you know. What the hell was I doing, you know? Well, I got a C, that's great. And it's like, anyway, just kind of the sheet here is I got my first DUI at 16. I probably should have figured that out, you know. It's like, hey, none of my buddies had a DUI. In fact, nobody had a license yet, you know, but that didn't stop me. In fact, I didn't even have a car. I borrowed it and took a little joyride and ended up down at the police station. But again, back then, it was like, just get this kid, send him home, you know. And the universe did not, you know, said, yeah, let this guy get burnt a little bit more, because I got away pretty much unscathed on that one. You know, got back, you know, my parents were like, what the hell is wrong with this kid? You know, it's like, and I could not explain what was wrong with me. You know, I kind of just thought, like, that alcoholic mantra, if you had my life, you would drink too, I guess. You know, there is nothing wrong with my life. It's my attitude toward life, which I never really wanted to adjust, because why should I? You know, that's just the grind that I would get into. So after that, I kind of got the label of being like the rebel, the bad guy and everything in school, you know. And I kind of liked that. It gave me an identity, I guess, you know. And so I pursued it, you know. It's like the more bizarre stuff you would do, the better or something. And little did I know that there's that phrase in the big book, again, they call it full flight from reality. It's like, yeah, why would I care, you know, if somebody gets hurt or whatever. I'm having fun, you know, this is good. So, again, that starts creeping in. I never noticed it at the time. I thought this was just the way everyone had a life like this, right? And slowly, things get worse. Just like they say, things get worse. They never get better, you know? The only way things got better is if I, like, self-medicated more somehow, you know? And then it would just, like they say, I would seek oblivion, you know? And then those four horsemen would show up. You know, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. And they actually showed up pretty early in my life. And I didn't notice it. I just kept going with it. So going on, got my second DUI at 20. That was kind of a surprise. I wasn't even, I did have a license, so that hadn't helped, you know, but I was driving somebody else's car going to get booze at 3 in the morning, and there was no place open at 3 in the morning for booze, so I don't even know what the hell I was doing out there. But that time, the ramifications were a little worse. You know, this time I had to go to jail, had to get someone to come bail me out, and then I had to go to this counseling thing because they said, yeah, society starts noticing us. It's like, what the hell are you doing, you know? And somebody said, they're like, social fireworks start happening. It's like, boom, what is that? And so I went to this counseling thing, and I just, you know, I wasn't quite sure. They were saying that maybe my life is out of control or something, and they're like, it's not out of control. You know, I'm okay. You know, I got a job, I'm doing all right. So once again, I walked the other way. And I said, I don't need the help, you know. I just need people to, like, behave the way I want them to, I guess. Which is, good luck with that. I've totally given up on that idea, you know. So problems, you know, I started getting problems with people. Usually the people that were telling me not to drink. If you were drinking with me, you were my best buddy. But there was always that one in the crowd that said, did you see what he did? You know, what is all the, you know? And it was amazing how quickly I could just avoid those people totally, you know? And little by little, like I said, the world gets smaller and smaller. I was not going to go anywhere that there wasn't booze, you know? Well, let's go to that. No, I don't think so. We're not going there. And, you know, I wouldn't go... Wouldn't go to, like, amusement parks or anything that didn't have booze. I think Disneyland had one, but it was just this tiny little place that only served beer or something. But it was good in a pinch, I guess. That worked out. I could make it with the beer. But that was always the big thing, you know. People would invite us to places, and I'd say, no, I don't want to go. Whatever. I'd make up shit. It's like, yeah, I can't do it. I'm working or something. This is all pretty much still back in Chicago. And then in 1984, I moved from Chicago to San Diego. And I thought, well, this is nice. You know, I can, well, that's something I figured. You know, in Chicago, if you're ever there and you're drinking, don't be drinking and passing out in the winter. Because that's a lot of people die that way. Because you get hypothermia and you never wake up, you know? So they would always say, go with two people, you know? Hopefully both of you don't pass out at the same time. So, I had this down to perfection. I knew how to work it. So I got to San Diego and I figured, this is nice. It never gets down, you know, never freezes, so I'm good, you know? So I had it going on. I made, like, I guess it was a geographical, you know, because I left all those people back in Illinois that thought maybe I was a little off-center behind. And now, little did I realize, I brought myself with, and things started materializing again, little by little. People would notice, like, you're drinking a little kind of too much. And my only defense, and they say this in the book, that we always seem to manage people that drink a little bit more than we do, you know? Because then I wasn't the problem. Right. They were the problem. Thank God I'm not like them, you know? You know, if I would get like them, I never got finished that sentence, you know, because I was never going to get like them. You know? But it happens, believe me. And that's another attribute of this disease. If you want to stay at it, want to be good at it, you better be able to change your normal pretty quick, you know. Like, oh, if I ever get that other DUI, that's it, you know, giving it up. Then you get that next DUI and go, well, you know, I know a lot of people had 3 DUIs, you know. So I'm still okay, I'm still good, you know, I'm still controlling my drinking, you know, which, again, if you're here and you're trying to drink, there's this peculiar mental dysfunction in my head that lasted for years, that no matter what happened, I thought I could control and enjoy my drinking. And that never happened. From the very first time, I did not control it. I kind of enjoyed it. But I could never do both, you know, and that's absolutely the truth. That if I was controlling it, I was not enjoying it. So, my only path forward to live reasonably happy and reasonably sane is not pick up that drink, you know. That's just the way it goes. So that's the way I made it here, was to realize I'm powerless over alcohol. You know, it's that first step. So, let's see, let me say that. I have problems increased. They do, you know, little by little, things just started getting in the way. I started acting differently, you know, and here's another thing, I'll share that right away. If you're an alcoholic and you want to be a good one, you have to have a black belt in lying, you know. I had to have to lie every second of the day, practically. It's like, what did I say? Oh, yeah, that's right, and it was... Believe me, many morning I'd wake up, I'd be like ready to go, and I'm just like overwhelmed. It's only like 6:30 in the morning, because I've got so much crap, so many lies going on. For what? So I could get to that drink. That's it. Which only compounded things that make me feel like, God, if you had my life, you would drink too. Holy crap. Only to find out I take that drink, and that would be like that extremely short symptom relief, only to be alerted a couple of minutes later, like, God, do I have enough? Will I be able to get, you know, where I want to go? Will I have more when I come to? You know, it's like this, it's insanity. So, all right, so life goes on, and then in 1999, DUI number 3. Yay! And that was after a lot of relation problems. I was married at the time. I don't know what I was doing. I was, again, more full flight from reality. I didn't like having to deal with really any people, you know, just let me have a drink and I'd be okay. And the DUI, I could tell, looking back, I could tell I was a definite full-blooded alcoholic, because I was upset that I wasn't even drunk when they pulled me over. What are you talking about? I ain't drunk, I'm still standing, you know? I could even say my ABCs, you know? Like, come on. You know, and then, you know, they did the breathalyze, and I said, yeah, come on over here, you know? And that was kind of like it was the last straw, but my wife at the time thought, man, this is way too much. I had a baby boy at the time, and it wasn't looking too good for Joe, you know. Of course, I didn't know that. I thought, like, I'm going to make it work. I know what I did wrong that time, you know. I shouldn't park on that street when I'm drinking, you know. That was the problem. And so they told me, hey, Joe, why don't you come over and we're going to do this, like, rehab thing. And I go, wow, thank God. You know, because I thought I could go in there. It was like football playoff time. And I go, finally, I can go to some place and watch the playoff game without being interrupted all the damn time about my drinking and all this other shit. So I get there, I'm packing 2 suitcases, I walk in, and it's a freaking psych ward, you know? They'd say, hey, give me that stuff. You ain't bringing any of this stuff in. Hey, take your shoelaces off too, buddy. And there was no TV. And they're like, what the? Come on, you know. I'm going to read the brochure more closely next time, because this is not what I thought it was going to be. I thought, hey, finally, I get some peace and quiet. And I was there. I did get, then they start, you know, kind of giving you these drugs to ease you off, because by that time, I was actually, I didn't know it at the time. I thought I was in early stage of MS or something, because I was, like, shaking all the time. No, that was just DTs, you know. I didn't know it at the time. But they started giving me, like, Librium and stuff, so I wouldn't, like, I could, like, hold a cup of coffee without spilling it on myself and everything. So I get there, and I'm doing okay, you know, pretty good. I still wasn't too sure about not drinking. I just knew that I'm not coming back to this place. Yeah. And I got out. They said, hey, Joe, the lawyers by that time, and they were saying, you should probably go to AA, you know, because this ain't looking too good for you. And by the way, you should go to this outpatient. And I go, okay, I'm going to go. I'll go. So by that time, somehow I got my license back. And I was going to this outpatient, which was not AA, but it was heavily, the guys I know now that were talking, they were AA people, you know. They were telling us AA stuff. And I'm there like, yeah, that's good. You know, I got a full-time job. You know, I'm back and forth. I got a long drive. And they give you a 20-minute break in this after-work outpatient. So I go, you know, that's the time I can go across the street and get a couple of martinis. And I down them real quick. You know, if I can do that, then all this stuff will be okay, you know. I'm doing all right. Nobody's making any big deals about me. So I did, you know, and I thought I was golden. So I could come walking back, you know. And that guy goes, hey, Joe, I think you're shit-faced. And, you know, this is an alcohol prevention program. And talk about denial. You know what my thought was? What an asshole, you know? I'm trying to be like this good guy. I'm going along with all this stuff, and you're singling me out. And I didn't like that, you know? Why? You know? I found out, you know, that was the moment somewhere in the galaxy, maybe all those people praying for me, that was the beginning of the end of my resistance to the fact that I might maybe be powerless over alcohol. And it didn't happen immediately, but it was there. You know, the kind of the seed was planted. I remember it was a Friday or a Thursday, and I was driving home, and I figured, well, I'm going to tell the wife, I don't know, I better stop and get something to drink. So I'm in the parking lot at a Lucky Store or whatever it was, down on a couple of martinis, and for the first time in my life, it didn't taste right. I go, they never have expiration dates on these things, but I ain't gonna drop it. And for the first time in my entire life, I did not finish a drink. And something in my head was, that's weird. That's really weird, Joe. What's wrong? That's way weird. But I figured, well, I'll do better tomorrow. I'll be all right tomorrow. I got home, and I was thinking like, what I was thinking was, how the hell, this was Saturday, the February 26th, which is my sobriety day, 2000. And at 12 noon, right? I remember 12 noon, because at 10 o'clock, I woke up Saturday. The wife was taking my son to baseball practice. I had it timed down to the last 5 minutes. As soon as I walk out the door, I'm going to call the liquor store, have them deliver the case of martinis, and then I'll be okay, and then everything will be golden. And for some reason, as they left, I realized this feeling came over me that I never felt before, but I felt like I experienced that I had lost everything in my life was gone, and that there was nothing I could do to prevent it. And then this word, the all of that AA that I was around, I started thinking like, well, maybe I'm powerless over alcohol and I'm going to kill myself. Not let down, but I'm definitely going to die a miserable death. And for some reason that went from, you know, just blah, 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 to my heart, you know. And I just started crying. I didn't know what to do. I was alone. And the next thing I remember is they came home. I hadn't called for the booze. And I went to a meeting that night. And I'd been around AA. I wasn't in AA. It was around AA. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go to the meeting because I can drink at the meeting. On the way to the meeting anyway. That was my clever plan. Right. That's what my world had come down to. AA was where I went to go drink. This time, I didn't pick up a drink. I went to the meeting, and I'd been there for like 2 months at least, and drinking all the time. And they say, you know, anyone with 30 days or less. Not me, you know. And then all of a sudden, my hand went up, like, dude, get down. And I said, hey, you know, I've been bullshitting you people. I've been drinking. And nobody said, get the hell out of here. They said, welcome home. You know? And thank God that was there. Because I didn't have a better idea in my head. You know, it's like, this is it. It's the end of the road. Pencils down. You're screwed. You got to stay and do this. Whether I had to detach from the results for the first time. Anyway, as I was walking out, somebody, you know, I heard people mumbling like, thanks, Joe, you know, you're good and everything. Somebody came, I don't even know who it was, they patted me on the back, and they said, Joe, the program works better if you don't drink. And that, you know, that stuck with me. It's like, yeah, if I don't drink, then I won't have to do this stuff, you know? All of this immense effort to pretend like I'm not drinking, I won't have to do. And I did that the next day, and the day after, and the day after. I kept going to meetings, and little by little, I started to understand what people had been telling me all along. And that was the beginning of my journey. My journey, not so much to, well, sobriety is definitely one of the benefits of that AA presents, but it gives me an opportunity to know myself. It's a journey inside. And you'll hear that if you stick around. This is a total inside job. You know, all of this, and I know these steps, I have to do these internally first. You know, I have to allow things to be. You know, I had to resign as general manager of the universe. You know, I cannot, you know, keep track of, you know, every little bit that goes on in the world. And that's an immense freedom, believe me. It's like, whew, I'm off the hook for all of this stuff that I thought I had to do. Which, again, if you read the book, they say that in the very first preface to the first edition. It said that there were 100 people with a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body that had recovered. It was like, and I know what they mean, you know. And that's something that AA has provided me, because they told me if you put down the drink, you got to get to AA. And they mean it, you know, because my seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that's before I took the drink. And that's kind of why I drank. So when I put down the drink, now I have to treat my alcoholism with something else. I treat it with the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship. And everything that's suggested. And by doing that, I get to live minute to minute, you know, reasonably happy and reasonably sane. So, again, if you're new here, if you just stop drinking, you'll find out why you drank. Believe me. That's what they say. You want to know why you drink? Stop drinking. You'll find out. And, you know, they say that's what sober stands for. As son of a bee, everything's real, you know. There is no more hiding. I cannot, like, self-medicate. I'll be sitting there, but I'm, like, a million miles away. You can tell me all the bad stuff about me you want. I'm not hearing it. And that's no longer there. But what's even better is I don't self-medicate, and I kind of address each moment as it arises, and maybe even like go along with it, you know? I don't struggle as much. And they say that, again, in the book, they talk about, there's that phrase, I've given up fighting everyone and everything. And if I do that, believe me, the world opens up. And I truly believe, I study other like spiritual practices, and all of them talk about if I'm at odds with the current moment, the universe hears me. If I'm at war at the current moment, the universe says, oh, at war. You want war? Here it comes. You got it, buddy. And I've learned a degree of humility. It's like, it's not my job to manage anybody except, really, me and my current thinking. And that's a full-time job for me. I don't need any more work, you know. That's something I always have to work on. And I've learned that when I don't, I find out really quick, you know. Let's see here. So today, after learning kind of the hard way, or I don't know, that I need to live more skillfully. And that's what these steps and the traditions allow me to do. They guide me to behavior that doesn't cause suffering for me. And that's, I never would have figured that out. I'm so glad that Alcoholics Anonymous arrived on the planet before I did, and somebody was there. You know, there's probably hundreds of thousands of people that I owe my life to that I'll never know, that went to AA meetings, talked about how they recovered, and the next guy did the same thing. You know, that's how this works, is that one alcoholic helping another alcoholic. And thank God that happened. Because none of this I would have like thought, hey, that's a good idea, Joe. Let's do that. So today, my daily routine is pretty simple. It's gotten much less complicated than it was, you know. I'd wake up in the morning and have to get all my lies right and dial into how I was going to manipulate people. I do what I kind of mentioned in the book. On awakening, I ask God to direct my thinking, to keep it divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And that's key, you know. It took me a while to figure out that I was actually supposed to do that stuff. And when I did, I realized, like, oh my God, I'm a little self-pity, little crap thing, man. It's like every moment there's something that's wrong in Joe's world. It's like, shut up, would you? And I've learned to be, through this program, to be gentle with myself. You know, it's like, it's okay. We know that that is probably not the way you want to go. So let's just think what we should do. And normally, that thing I should do is take the next breath. Just keep moving. Don't stop and pick a fight with reality. Because if I do, I get my ass kicked. You know, that's what happens repeatedly. And after I do that, you know, after I make contact with a power greater than myself that I call God, I ask, what meaning am I going to today? You know, and that's the two things that I do. And then, believe me, I have a pretty active life. I have like full-time job, kids, grandkids, medical issues in the family, all this. And all that is fine as long as I don't try to ratchet it into place. You know, here's a secret that I have to maintain my well-being. Otherwise, watch out, I become a problem to myself, a major problem, and everyone around me. I become like a little weapon of mass destruction. It's like, boom, watch out, Joe's in the house, and you know, you're going to be in my way. That is the insanity. It is, I suddenly become, if I'm not working this program, I become important again. Somebody said, when I become important in my head, that's a problem. Like, snap to, because that ain't going to work. Yeah. So, you know, kind of getting close here. Anyway, in the big book, there's a number of promises, and all of them have come true if I, A, work for them, and B, be present enough to realize they're materializing in my life. You know, a lot of times I'm just too damn busy with what I got to do now. What are they doing? I don't even realize what is manifesting in my life. You know, and that is a practice I have to do. I have to quiet my mind and be present. It's kind of like those steps 1, 2, and 3. You know, I used to say that when I first got here, they kept telling Joe, keep coming back, keep coming back. I did. For other reasons, we already talked about those reasons, you know. But I came back to meetings, and today I come back, but I come back to steps 1, 2, and 3, you know, minute to minute, because life is in session. And if I start, if I say, hey, that ain't right, you know, it's it took me a long time to figure out that I'm powerless over alcohol, but I'm also powerless over people, places, and things. And those never go away. So I have to be willing to allow that to be, you know, as much as it, my ego freaks out about that, that's okay, you know, I've been working on my ego, I got it down to one zip code, and I think it's going to be okay, you know, it can flare up at any moment, but that's all right. That's why I keep coming to meetings, to remind myself of what I'm up against, and this is, you know, I haven't had a drink in 19 years, but I'm just a bad attitude, and I'm likes away from another drunk. And my body says, if you take a drink, we want more drinks, buddy. Forget everything else. You know, the family, the job. Just push that away, because that's interfering with your drinking. You know, and that will never going to change. So, anyway, I'm going to wrap up here. It's, what I want to read is one of my favorite promises. So not the entire thing, but it's on page 164. It's, I have to call it the last promise in the big book. It says, ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. And I put a little parenthesis there. The man, like me, I'm sick. What can I do to help me? You know, and then everybody else. But I got to keep an eye on me. You know, see to it that your relationship with him is right. And that's like an easy task. You know, all I have to do, to tell the truth, is acknowledge that there's a power greater than myself. That's it. I don't have to work too hard at it. You know, it's there. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. And I can tell you, my immediate great fact is that it's 8 o'clock on a Sunday night and I'm not drunk on my ass. You know, that I never forget that, because that was just the way life lived. But I tell you, I get many more great events. You know, the fact that I can be present for people in my life, I can enjoy, I can actually remember what goes on at stuff now. And I wouldn't miss that for sure. I'm sure I would have. I never would have come out of that cave to look out and say, oh, wow, there's a life out here, you know. So, again, I owe that all to a power greater than myself, AA, and all those people that were praying for me, I guess, you know, because this is not the thing I was going to do, all right? So if you're here, you're new, and you're thinking, like, I don't belong here, you're probably in the right place. And if nothing else, please keep coming back. You know, if nothing else, come back and see if I change my story about anything, you know? Because I'm going to keep coming back. So thanks for letting me share.
Let's give Joe another round of applause. Yeah.